This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
This is the Turn on the Jets Podcast.
Turn on the Jets Podcast.
And now, here's your host, Joe Caparoso.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another special Saturday edition of the Turn on the Jets Podcast. Today, we're going to be joined by former New York Jets offensive lineman Damian Woody to talk about the state of the Jets offensive line, their decision to hire Adam Gase, Frank Pollock, and Greg Williams. Get Damian's Super Bowl prediction and also just talk about the overall state of the Jets organization heading into this offseason. It's about an 18-minute interview that we're going to dive into real quickly here. If you didn't get a chance yet, listen to Thursday's episode in our normal slot with Connor Rogers. We do about 35 minutes on the 2019 NFL Draft. Really good in-depth conversation, and we'll definitely check in with Connor a few more times before the Jets decide what they do with their third overall pick. Reminder that I am in Atlanta for the Super Bowl, so give me a follow on Twitter at Jay Caparoso and give us a follow on Instagram at turnonthejets_IG to follow me bouncing around Atlanta to the game, to NFL honors, and hopefully we'll grab some interesting content with some of the wide range of media members, players, coaches who will all be down there. My first Super Bowl should be fun. Of course, the Patriots are there, so not the best situation. Before we jump into our interview with Damian, want to give my Super Bowl prediction. As it stands right now, the Patriots are still sitting at 2.5-point favorites. Looks like the over-under is going to hover in around 55 or 56. I would love with my heart to bet on the Rams and pick the Rams. I do think the Rams have a better chance than most people are giving them. But gun to my head, if I had to make a selection, you probably go with New England here. I think the over in New England finding a way to cover that 2, 2.5, whatever it settles in at, probably makes the most sense. I do think they match up pretty well with the Rams, and the way they've been moving the football, particularly running the ball, is going to be challenging. And how they, you know, Brady does his thing with the quick releases and how they move the football, getting James White involved out of the backfield. They've been signs of life from Gronk. You know, Goff is going to need to play the game of his life, and he was excellent in the second half against the Saints. You know, I don't doubt McVay's ability to come up with something creative and outside the box. That's why I do think this will be a one-possession type game. But ultimately, late in the game, I do think the Pats will find a way to pull it out. Unfortunately, and no, I don't think Tom Brady or Bill Belichick is going to retire, win or lose in the Super Bowl, which sucks, but it's just the reality of the situation. For the Jets, as an AFC East team, one question that I keep getting online about the Jets this offseason, unrelated to free agency, unrelated to the NFL draft, is about their jerseys. Everyone's very excited about the Jets' new uniforms. Great marketing for the NFL and the Jets. I can't imagine they're going to sell out. I mean, I can't imagine how quickly they're going to sell these things when they go out. I began to question about timing and design. There's all types of rumors floating around. All I can tell you is that I have heard that April 4th, or right around then, is when we'll probably see that new design released formally by the team. I'm sure someone will try to leak it out before, but I'd look to right around that first week of April for when we're going to see that design rolled out. In terms of what I've heard about it, and again, I am not a reporter, so please take my rumors that I've heard with a grain of salt. I've heard there's a black alternate jersey, but the primary jersey does not have a dramatic change to the current logo. I've heard there's a different shade of green that skews a little closer towards the Kelly green, and that's basically it. Not a ton of information, nothing all that radical, but that's what I've heard. Could be right, could be wrong, but I'd be looking for that stuff to be rolled out April 4th, so then you could go buy your new Sam Darnold jersey, your old Jamal Adams jersey, or you could just go to our Jets Loyalist store and buy a Save a Sam shirt and a President shirt, or you could buy all of it all together. Anyway, we're going to jump into our interview with Damian Woody now. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next Thursday with a normally scheduled episode, so make sure to subscribe on iTunes. Hit us with a rating. We're well up over 300 now. Let's get to 400. New feeds available on Spotify or Google Play that I'll share out with the new episodes, so keep an eye out for those. And we are now joined by today's guest, former New York Jet, currently one of the best out there in sports media, has made the seamless transition from professional athlete to sports media. Second or third time on the podcast, I think, over the past few years, Mr. Damian Woody. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So I want to dive right in talking about the offensive line, something that not a lot of people have expertise in, and obviously this is an area that you do. Off the top, one of the most common things I see from fans or from people talking about the sport is, why can't you just move, example, left tackle down to left guard? Or why can't we just move this right tackle to left tackle? So an example for the Jets is, well, maybe they should draft Jonah Williams, but move Kelvin Beachum to right tackle, even though he's been playing left tackle. Basically, are the offensive line positions as interchangeable as people tend to talk about them as being?
Yeah, you know, it's people think that it's just as easy as, well, we can just, you know, put, you know, a right tackle and move him to left tackle. What people don't understand is when it comes to offensive line play, it's a couple things. Number one, it's a muscle memory thing. If you're going to make a switch with a guy, it's better to do it after the off season when you've had time to rep it, you know, time after time after time. I think a lot of fans don't understand just how delicate that situation is. Of just, you know, making a big move like that. Most guys have only repped one position, you know, for most of their career. So for you to ask a player to make a switch to another position, it takes some time. So it needs a lot of rep. And overall, when I look at the Jets offensive line, the chemistry, I think one thing that stood out to me watching the Jets offensive line last year was the negative plays in the running game. That's the number one killer. That's the number one thing we always talk about when I was a player, is that you can't have negative plays. And how many times when we watched the Jets offensive line last year where they was, you know, second and 12, second and 11, where they had negative yardage, it hurts you so bad being behind the down and distances. So to me, that's the number one area that the Jets need to improve upon. Is a play up front with the offensive line.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
How do you rank the priorities of...
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Improvement. Tackle, guard, center. Where does the most work or the most improvement need to come from? Where should they be focusing their energy in free agency and in the NFL draft?
Well, listen, I've been tooting Jonah Williams, his ability to be able to, you know, come to the Jets. We don't know what the Jets are going to do as far as free agency, trading down in the NFL draft, but you know, I've been high on Jonah Williams the whole season. I think he's a very efficient tactician. He's been well coached at the University of Alabama, and I think he would be a great fit. But you know, overall, what you're seeing a lot in NFL offensive lines is you got to stabilize the middle, the interior of your offensive line, because it's so important to keep what we call the depth of the pocket. You know, where the quarterback has room to step up and deliver, or in the run game, having the running backs having the ability to make those cuts in the interior of the offensive line. And quite honestly, that's been a problem area for the Jets. It seems like in the past few seasons, the interior of the offensive line. So the Jets are going to need multiple new pieces in that offensive line, especially in the interior.
When you look at the recent hire they made, they hired the former Cincinnati Bengals offensive line coach Frank Pollock. He used to be with the Dallas Cowboys. Last year they were running a pretty zone-heavy scheme, I believe, with Rick Dennison. And it seemed like guys like James Carpenter and Brian Winters struggled particularly with that. Carpenter is a free agent. How do you think the scheme could change with Pollock, or how do you think it should potentially change, assuming they have – I don't know. Let's say they'll probably have at least three of the five same starters back next year.
Yeah, I think what you'll see from Frank Pollock in the running game is you're going to see a diverse rushing attack. And what I mean by that, you'll see a rushing attack where you'll see, you know, a gap scheme, you'll see counter schemes, you'll see traps. You know, you'll see a lot of variety depending on the opponent that you play week in and week out. You know, last year what you saw from the Jets is it was almost like putting a square peg in a round hole because Rick Dennison loved the zone running scheme, but you necessarily might not have the personnel to run the zone running scheme up front with the offensive line. Usually in that zone running scheme, you have, you know, smaller guys, a little bit more nimble guys that can move really well. Well, you know, you look at a James Carpenter. This is a guy who's been, you know, throughout his career, predominantly a power guy, you know, who excelled at man blocking and power schemes and so on and so forth. So I didn't necessarily see the fit with the zone running scheme that it just tried to use last year. So I think they're going to marry with, you know, bringing in a Frank Pollock. They'll marry the scheme with the personnel and be really effective with it.
What were your initial reactions and thoughts to the Jets' decision to hire Adam Gase as their next head coach? He was a guy, there was a lot of talk about Mike McCarthy, a lot of talk about Matt Rhule, Cliff Kingsbury. Gase then somewhat came out of nowhere to ultimately get the job. What was your initial thought and reaction to the decision?
Initially I wasn't a big fan of it, simply because I just felt like you know, you heard some rumblings down in Miami where, you know, you talked about, you know, maybe some players didn't like him down there. And just the fact of, you know, this is a guy who was dismissed from Miami Dolphins and then gets hired right away. And the first thing I thought in my mind, I thought of two people, Eric Mangini and Rex Ryan. It basically, you know, similar type things happened with them, and it didn't work in either case. When they were hired again the second time. So, you know, that was my initial fear with bringing in Adam Gase right after being let go in Miami. I think the key here is, you know, the type of staff that he's putting together. So far, it looks like, you know, it's a pretty impressive staff that he's putting together. Like the Greg Williams hire, keeping Boyer as special teams coach, which I think was pretty impressive. So it seems like getting the right assistance and doing what's not just hiring your buddies, but getting the right guys in there is, that's a first step in the right direction.
You mentioned you like the Greg Williams hire. What do you think he's going to bring to the Jets defense, and how do you think he's going to shake things up? Do you think he's going to be able to get more out of guys like Leonard Williams and Darren Lee, who I'd say have been somewhat disappointing through their first 3 or 4 years as guys who were taken in the first round? What are you expecting to see from this defense, and how's it going to be different from what we saw under Todd Bowles the past 4 years?
Well, listen, I think, you know, first of all, let me say, I think Todd Bowles is an excellent defensive mind, and I wish him nothing but the best down there in Tampa Bay. I think he's going to do great down there. With that being said, moving forward, I think Greg Williams is going to, number one, he's a fiery coach, and he's going to demand accountability. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of been lacking, especially on the defensive side of football, when you've invested, you know, all of those high picks on the defensive side of football. You want some return on those guys, whether it's Darren Lee, Leonard Williams. You want those guys to be playing at a high level, and I think that's where Greg Williams comes in at, and demanding excellence from those guys. Because if those guys are playing up to their capability, this Jets defense can be really, really good. So I think, that's why it's a great hire, in my opinion.
Looking back over at the potential work the Jets need to do this offseason, I think this roster needs a lot of work. I think all of us agree on that. I'm not sure how you couldn't at this point. When you look at free agency, which I think tends to sometimes not live up to the hype that fans will make it out to be, just because teams usually have the flexibility to keep their best players, what do you think a realistically successful Jets free agency period looks like that gives them the opportunity to really move the ball forward with the current state of their roster?
Well, listen, I think the number one objective for the Jets, you know, heading into free agency this offseason in general, is you got to surround Sam Darnold with more talent offensively. You know, this is an offensive-driven league. I mean, look at the four teams that were in the championship games. You're talking about the top four offenses in the National Football League. So you have to be able to score points. So for the Jets, you got to surround Sam Darnold with more talent, whether it be offensive line, which I think the Jets are definitely going to do, address that area. Getting a number one wide receiver, whether it be draft or trade for a number one, sign a legit, you know, running back. I know a lot of people have talked about Le'Veon Bell, and with the Jets having over $100 million in salary cap space, they'll have an opportunity to address a lot of these things, and also pass rush. I mean, how many years have we talked about with the New York Jets that they haven't had, you know, a legit edge rusher? So I'm sure that's something that's going to be explored, but those guys don't shake free that often. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but when you have the number three overall pick and you have over $100 million in salary cap space, you're able to make up a lot of ground.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Sam Darnold's rookie year, a little up and down, but closed on a very positive note, particularly against Houston and Green Bay. You saw some of the improvisation, some of the playmaking ability, the reason that he was the third overall pick in the NFL draft. What are your expectations from Sam Darnold in his second season? And just how good do you think this guy could be? And where do you think he's going to fit into that hierarchy of young quarterbacks going forward, you know, with Watson and Mahomes, Trubisky, Baker, a lot of new faces in the AFC in particular, but then also throughout the league. What are you expecting from Darnold in this second season?
I think the sky's the limit for Sam Darnold. I really do. I think what you saw from him, you saw a 21-year-old quarterback who went through ups and downs, but towards the end of the season, you saw, like, you got a peek into what the future can be for Sam Darnold. I mean, this is a guy who, quite frankly, wasn't surrounded with a bunch of talent, but boy, did he show off elite traits that make you salivate if you're a fan. And I think that's why Adam Gase is and the whole organization is so excited. If you can surround this guy with more talent, with some elite talent, man, this guy can make a huge leap going into year two. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. Again, you're talking about the number three overall pick, over $100 million in salary cap space. If the Jets address this judiciously and really add on to this offense could just grow by leaps and bounds in year two.
You mentioned that they have this cap space. They have the third overall pick. They got an exciting young quarterback. We know they have Jamal Adams. Am I crazy for thinking it's fair to expect or somewhat demand as a fan that this is year five for the Jets GM? They haven't made the playoffs in 8 years. It's the third longest drought in the NFL. They're 14-34 over the past 3 years. I've seen Trubisky, Jackson, Watson, Mahomes, Wentz, Dak, Goff, all within the playoffs within the first 2 years of their career. Why should the expectations for the Jets this year not be to compete for a playoff spot and to be over 500? How many years is this rebuild permitted to go on?
Well, I think a lot of Jets fans I don't think a lot of Jets fans are going to feed into the rebuild moving forward, to be honest with you. The expectations will be high. Again, if you go by the timeline of what the Jets laid out there, of the way this whole rebuild has been going, next year is supposed to be the year where the Jets should be competing for a playoff spot. You stripped down your roster. You got your quarterback. You got other pieces on the team. You got over $100 million in cap space. Now it's just up to Mike McCagnan and his staff to get the right pieces in place. And listen, we've seen How many times have we seen teams go from worst in that division to first or worst to the playoffs? We see this like every year. So it's not far-fetched to expect the Jets to go from worst in the division to possibly being a playoff team. I think that should be the expectation.
All right, final question before we let you go, because we've been kind of aligned on this, I've noticed through Twitter. Tell me, you've been in the league, you cover the league now. Explain to me why, from someone with more of an inside access than I do, why was 100% of the pressure and the blame put on Todd Bowles? So I don't think Todd Bowles did a good job at all as the Jets head coach, and I think it was more than fair for the team to move on from him. Why was no attention seemingly put on the front office for the struggles they've had in the recent years and the timeline that they're working with?
You know, that's a great question. That was one of the things. I remember back in November, I had tweeted out that I thought this would have been like the perfect offseason for the Jets to wipe the slate clean, because you got your quarterback, you got all the other couple pieces on the roster, and you got all this cap space. And I just felt that in 4 years, how much better had the roster gotten in 4 years under Mike McCagney? You know, that was my whole issue. You know, the Jets went all in 2015, and they came up a game short. They lost the last week in Buffalo. So they pivoted and said, you know what, we're going to strip it all down. So Mike McCagney had all that time, along with Todd Bowles, to retool and restock the roster. To get this roster up to par. And anyone looking at the Jets roster can see that's not the case. And even, you know, your star player, Jamal Adams, came out and said, we need more dogs on the roster, which is, he's absolutely correct. There's just not enough talented players, not enough difference makers on this Jets roster. And to me, you know, more pressure should have been mounted on Mike McCagney for the lack of playmakers on the roster.
All right, Damian Woody, we appreciate you taking the time for joining us. Everyone, make sure to give him a follow on Twitter. You're all over the place and the other media outlets. Give me your Super Bowl prediction. We're going to be running this Saturday. I cannot believe that I have to watch the Patriots in the Super Bowl again, ninth time. What do you think? Do you think this is a Patriots blowout, or are we looking at a potentially close game here?
Well, I hate to say it for Jets fans, but I think the Patriots are going to win their sixth Super Bowl. I just think that the Patriots, they match up very well with the Los Angeles Rams, and it's just hard to bet against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in the biggest moments in the season. So I think that they'll pull this one out.
All right. Well, I hope you're wrong, but probably not. So we shall see. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll definitely grab some time later in the offseason.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you for having me.